Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to another Invest with Clarity podcast with me, Matt Halloran, and of course, Mark Pearson. Today, we're going to dive into a word we don't use very often in this podcast, and that is innovation. Mark, where are we going with this today?
Well, I had a plan and a strategy, but the listeners to this podcast don't realize that you and I have literally been talking for the last 55 minutes about various things.
Various things.
And the theme of what we were talking about, when you break it down, is innovation.
Yes, it is.
Innovation in the financial services business. Mm-hmm. So let me answer your question about what do I mean about innovation. The original strategy for this podcast was innovation overrides fear, and how technological advancements, productivity are all tied at the hip, and innovation leads to profitability. Innovation leads to growth. Innovation leads to being a differentiator. And being a differentiator sometimes isn't good, but many times it is good. You can go down the list of innovators over the years, Matt, and two of the biggest that come to mind right now are based upon what's happening in the markets. And number one is Tesla, and number two is Microsoft.
Okay.
And Tesla hit over $1 trillion. Here's a car company, first car company ever to go over $1 trillion in market capitalization. Microsoft announced their earnings today and blew the cover off the ball, and their CEO, which came on in 14 when the stock was in its 40s, is now in its 300s and completely re-innovated the company. Successful companies know how to innovate. They know how to provide shareholder value. And one of the innovations we were going to talk about today is the innovation of crypto and crypto mining. Mm-hmm. But I think it's almost more important today to talk about the innovation of the financial services business. How about that for a curveball?
Hey, brother, I'm ready for you. We've been warming up for 45 minutes. I'm excited about where we're going here.
Well,
okay, what is that? Yeah, okay, go ahead.
No. Well, I was going to say, when I think about Nepsis, I don't think innovation. I think clarity.
And I challenged you on that a little while ago, because I think you're wildly innovative with how you look at how people should understand what they're invested in. And that's true innovation.
You literally stole my thunder.
Sorry, dude.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But I had this epiphany that, you know what? Clarity in the financial service business is innovative.
I know, dude.
Because people don't think about clarity. They don't think about the power of clarity. And I've had this conversation recently with several people I know, because we have a position in a company, and I can talk more about it now because it's now on the NASDAQ, and now we have to file our 13 Fs with the SEC every quarter. So even though we disclosed before, it was harder to see. Now we have our position in ZEST, Zest, eQuark Holdings. And, you know, these message boards, you read these message boards. One guy literally thought I bought eQuark, the company, because the headline said that Nepsis buys eQuark. It's part of the 13F filings. We want to talk about a lack of clarity. Yeah. And someone didn't say to him, no, the guy bought the stock. He didn't buy the company. Ugh. And so people need clarity, right? Innovation. And EcoArc, of course, is we'll do a podcast on that one another day.
Okay.
But I've been learning that maybe Nepsis is innovative.
No, there's no maybe.
Well, thank you. What we were talking about what modern portfolio theory has done to our industry. And you were saying to me, he goes, you know, the biggest way to grow, this is you speaking. So the biggest way to grow your firm is to manage money for other financial advisors.
Huh?
And I said, I don't want to manage money for other financial advisors. You know what? I've often said this. I'm going to say it again. The amount of assets I have under management to me is irrelevant. I don't care how fast I grow, how slow I grow. Here's what I care about. I care about the quality of what we educate, teach, lead, guide our clients in. Let me give you an example. I have this client. He had $500,000 in his account, down from 800,000 during COVID. I haven't told you this story.
Okay.
He was at like 850 or 900 grand, whatever it was. He went down to 500,000 or 600,000 during COVID. And he called me and he said, I'm thinking about going to cash and selling it all. And the market was already down 30%. And I said, why would you do that? I've never seen a buying opportunity this good since the financial crisis.
Yeah.
And the long story short is he works with one of my advisors now, and he has told the advisor, and he's told me, frankly, every time I talk to him, which is not very often, but every time I talk to him, the guy says, I still can't thank you enough for talking me off the ledge, because his 500,000 now is worth 1.4 million.
Yeah.
In a year and a half. And my point about the power of clarity is it only takes one decision by an investor to radically hurt their plan and long-term financial goals. And ultimately, at the end of the day, in the financial services business, when you're working with clients, isn't that really what it's all about?
It's what it should be about. And I want to, but you said something before you gave us that, the story of the client, that I want to come back to, which is I was challenging Mark, all of our listeners here, that one of the fastest ways that he could grow his assets under management and help more people gain clarity was by acquiring other books of business or having other advisors utilize stuff. And he pushed back. And so I want to clarify why the pushback was, is because of the fundamental mental shift that would have to happen in all of these people who have been programmed incorrectly by modern portfolio theory for years wouldn't be a smooth transition, just to say that. It's
so so think about clarity, and I still pinch myself sometimes, and I've talked to several people about this, close friends that, you know, I communicate with and talk with. We own clarity in the financial services business. Let me say that one more time. Actually, let me even be more brash about it. Here's a guy that barely got out of high school. I hope not many of my clients are going to leave me now after I say this. Here's a guy who barely got out of high school. In college, I had a 1.2 GPA. And I sat down with a guy, I'll never forget this. His name was Steve Wright. And I said, you know, I was waiting tables at a local restaurant. I said, you know, I want to go into the management program. And he says, why would you do that? And I said, well, I want to, you know, get a management, you know, I want to move up in the company. He says, let me ask you a question. This is a true story. Let me ask you a question. And Steve Wright, not the comedian, by the way. This is 1986, long time ago. I worked at a restaurant called Chi-Chi's.
Oh, I remember Chi-Chi's. Holy crap. Sorry, go ahead.
I worked at the original first Chi-Chi's.
Oh my gosh, dude.
In Richfield, Minnesota. It was one of the largest restaurants. We sit down. He goes, we're going to sit down after closing. After we close the restaurant, we're going to talk through about you going in the management position. So we sit down. I know exactly where I was sitting in that restaurant still today. You know, what is this, 2086, 96, 34 years later, 35 years later. And he says, why do you want to go into the management program? And I said, well, I want, you know, I'm, you know, I'm engaged. I'm going to get married. I want to get a career. I don't want to go to college. I hate school. You know, I'm an ADD-er, bores the tears out of me. I'm listening to guys, you know, in college, that they're in college because they can't go in the real world and get a job. So they become a professor, you know, that kind of stuff. Right. And he says, how many hours a week do you work? And I said, I work 30 hours a week. He says, how much money do you think you make? And I said, well, you know, with tip, because that's where you make the majority of your money back. As I said, hey, I'm probably on track to make 16 grand working 30 hours a week. He says, I work 60 hours a week and I have a salary and I make $25,000 as a manager. Why would you ever want to be a manager?
Oh.
Go get your college degree. That was my epiphany. There are many people that are responsible for my success. This guy is one of them and one of the biggest because of the epiphany it gave me. Here's the irony. I continued to work 30 hours a week, got married about a year later to my current beautiful wife of 34 plus years. And I took 139 credits over the next year and a half, almost 2 years, worked 30 hours a week and paid my entire way through college and graduated college still on time in 4 years after having a 1.2 GPA. Here's the point of the story. The point of the story is that process before progress. People focus on an outcome. They never focus on the process. But the key to success, in my opinion, is the process. The process is what creates progress. And when you think about modern portfolio theory, it's checking boxes. And to elaborate to what you said, Matt, about, you know, why don't you work with advisors? Why don't you have manage your money? Or why don't you go buy books of business? It is because if I go buy a book of business with an advisor, the education process or the educational journey that an investor has to go on to understand the Nepsis process is not sitting at a table and having a conversation with a financial advisor. It's going to college for 4 years.
Yeah.
In other words, it takes time.
Yeah.
And the reality is that because investors have been trained a certain way, they don't take the time. And that is at its core, the power of clarity. And you said, you know what? Because I'm like, I'm not innovative. All I do is invest in great businesses over time. And, you know, when I first started in the business, I always said to clients, investors, prospects, whoever it was, advisors, the key to successful investing has always been and will always be investing in great businesses over time. People don't want time. They want immediate gratification.
Okay. And they also, a lot of people, Mark, don't seem to want the level of clarity because of the level of work that goes into changing your mind to understand what clarity really is, which I think is unfortunate. But I also think that you're not giving yourself enough credit because I believe that the message is so clear. And so I've said this to you before, and I don't know if I've ever said it on the podcast, but I will be out with friends, right? And people will make some stupid thing about a mutual fund or blah, blah, blah. And they're like, well, how you work in this? And I'm like, let me ask you a question. And I ask them that one question. Do you know what companies you own? Well, what are you talking about? Individual stocks are too risky. So, but you own 1,000 individual stocks. And they're like, what are you talking about? I was like, look, I this would really take me a little, but I just want you to always ask yourself that question. The next time you go sit down with your advisor, I want you to ask what stocks you own and why they're in your portfolio and what those stocks do for you. And they were just, I mean, their mouths dropped. And I'm just thinking to myself, it's not because I've been working with you for so long. It's because it just, there is a level of clarity that just makes a lot of sense when you break it down like that. And it's also wildly innovative because innovative means that you're upsetting the apple cart and you're changing the way that people's perception is in whatever vertical you're in. And the other thing that we were talking about is the 60-40 split of modern portfolio theory and you know how that's how, well, I'm safe because of that. But where we are right now with the bonds,
Yeah.
Safety is not a word I would use.
Well, you're okay. So let me. Okay. So you said several things that are important.
Sorry, dude.
So that's okay. So, number one, a modern portfolio theory. Modern portfolio theory is about checking boxes. Mm-hmm. Broker dealers get worried about getting sued. Financial advisors get worried about getting sued, or having a complaint filed against them because they do things a certain way that are against the grain. They're against the norm, you know, and fully disclosed. I have been sued and the law twice, and the lawsuits are so ridiculous and bad. It's embarrassing. Because people don't know what they don't know. And when you think about checking boxes may work for a little while, but then they don't work. So what do you do then? Oh, I'm going to create some new boxes. When you were talking, something came to mind. Common sense equals clarity. Common sense equals clarity. My dad used to always say, common sense is uncommon. And I was young when he would say it, and I didn't necessarily always understand that, but I do now at my 56. Common sense is uncommon. Some of the things that people say and do just blow my mind. Mm-hmm. So I'm being interviewed by a broker dealer to manage money for their advisors, you know, a long time ago. And they said, we need a copy of your historical returns. And I said, and by the way, I had an SEC audit 7 or 8 years ago, same question. Someone out of Chicago, they said, we need a copy of your returns. And to the SEC auditor, I said, we don't publish returns. First of all, publishing returns is historical in nature and doesn't matter. And secondly, it's nothing more than an excuse for someone to justify their jobs when they use benchmarks. Mm-hmm. And the SEC auditor was super quiet for like 10 seconds. And I finally felt bad. I'm like, I guess you have never heard that before. And she said, no, I haven't. She said, so how are you growing and getting all your clients? I said, now you're asking the right question. So I'm in this back to the broker dealer thing. We want to see historical returns. And I said, we don't publish historical returns. And they said, why don't you publish historical returns? And I said, because they're historical. The guy says, right. I said, well, do you not see the irony of you've got to publish returns and then they put a disclosure at the bottom that says past performance is not indicative of future performance? I'm sorry. In common sense language, this means this is messed up.
That's right.
And so I'm like, well, historical returns are historical. There's no guarantees you're going to have that in the future. Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, well, yeah, absolutely. We agree with that. That makes total sense to us. But we got to check the box. Mm-hmm. I'm not in the business of checking boxes. Mm-hmm. I'm in the business of investing in great businesses. Mm-hmm. Those are two very different things. And that's why we went through the shift of moving from being a third-party money manager and or looking at buying books of business, because I've bought small books in the past.
Sure.
Very small. Why we wouldn't do it now. The mentality of the investor, which is driven by the industry and the media.
Yeah.
Makes it impossible for me. Impossible is a strong word. Very difficult for me to justify not only the valuations of buying a book of business, but we're going to lose clients in the process in the short term because they would not take the time to understand the process. And the process is what creates progress. So real quick, and then I'll let you jump in here. Back to the 60-40 quote-unquote modern portfolio deal. Financial advisors, two things financial advisors do and say, or investors, or frankly, I've heard commercials do this. Single stock investing is high risk. Eliminate single stock investing risk. Well, first of all, if you are asset allocating, you don't own a single stock In our case, we own 25 to 35. So the strategy or the messaging of own an ETF or a mutual fund to eliminate single stock risk is an inaccurate statement.
Yes.
Well, to the extent if you're only going to buy one stock, yes. But if you're going to buy individual stocks in an asset allocated portfolio, you eliminate that argument, right? Because frankly, if you own a mutual fund or an ETF, people will say to me, isn't buying individual stocks risky, Mark? I mean, I don't know why I would do that. And I'd say, well, do you own a mutual fund? Yeah. Is it in stocks? Yeah. Well, you know you own individual stocks in that mutual fund or ETF, don't you? Yeah. So the point is that the industry has put us in a box, has put investors in a box. And let me ask you the common sense fundamental question, Matt. Who are the most wealthy people in our country or world? People that what?
They own individual businesses, and they know what they own, and they own why they own it.
Bingo. And so what modern portfolio theory has done is created an environment of over-diversification and lack of clarity. What modern portfolio theory has also done is created checkboxes. I don't want to live in a world of checkboxes. Let me give you another example of box checking. I went to a cardiologist a couple, 3 months ago. I just wanted to get a baseline for my heart. I'm super health conscious. I exercise a ton. I've checked, you know, I've had my arteries checked for blockage and you know, not to get too into my personal life. But I'm like, I'm super, you know, I'm focused on making sure I stay healthy so I can do a good job. And I go to this cardiologist to get a baseline. My buddy doctor says, go get a baseline. So I go get a baseline. I'm sitting in the guy's office and he's baffled. This will blow your mind. He's baffled. He's baffled because my cholesterol is 275, which is, they would say, is high.
Okay.
But my good cholesterol is 120, which is considered very high.
Okay.
And I had a test done to see how much blockage I had in my arteries 2 years ago, and I had zero blockage. Zero. So he's sitting there at the desk going, I suppose you don't want to go on a statin. I'm like, I'm not going on a statin, right? I don't want to be on drugs. He goes, I can't figure out how you have a 275 cholesterol and your arteries aren't clogged at all. And I said, well, I exercise. I do fish oil. I do olive oil. I have super high good cholesterol. He goes, yeah, but I can't correlate. In other words, the healthcare business is very much like the financial services business.
Yeah, it is.
In checking boxes.
That's right.
But a person's body is exactly like another person's portfolio. None two
are alike. Amen, brother.
And so when you think about modern portfolio theory, when you think about investing, when you think about checking boxes, the way you eliminate all that is by having clarity. The road to Nepsis is the road to clarity. The road to clarity is a journey. It is not an immediate gratification piece. So let me real quickly tell you about the bond situation.
Yeah.
You were saying, you know, people are 60-40 in balanced portfolios. You know, they're in a risky position. I said, that's correct. We really haven't owned much of any bonds since 2014 or 15. We thought interest rates were too low then, too low now. We're now starting to see the, you know, the rising interest rates coming back. I'm 56. I don't know how old you are. I think you're in your 40s, but it doesn't matter. But we're older. Our kids, many of us who are older, lived in a world where interest rates were 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13%.
Hell yeah.
I bought my first house in our, we had to buy the rate down from 12% to 10. My kids, all they've known My daughter just refinanced it like 2.25%, mm-hmm. right? 3%, 4%. They've been coming down over the years. We're in a generation where people do not understand the danger of interest rates being this low. They've never been this low. We're at 35, 36 year mm-hmm. secular bull market of bonds. Checking boxes, cookie cutter asset allocation may be one of the most dangerous strategies, in my opinion, which lacks common sense for investors long term.
Yep. Wrap this up in a bow, because the last question that I have for you about innovation is how, through your process and the systems that you've created, how do you look at the company and how do you rate their innovationness, which I don't think is a word, innovativeness, innovation, innovative. Whatever, innovate, that they're innovative. There you go. Thank you. Yeah. This is like third time I've made up a word today, but anyway, how do
you- I make words up all the time.
But you know, that is actually supposed to be a sign of either craziness or intelligence. I choose the latter. But how do you look at a business and make that sort of analysis that you think that they're bringing something that is innovative?
Well, first of all, I think it's foolish to think that every company you own is going to be innovative.
Sure.
Before you get to the point of saying, how do you look at innovation? You have to look at, most importantly, asset allocation. In other words, how do I allocate my portfolio to accomplish the goals I've set forth? Mm-hmm. And the term innovation is a relative term. It's not an absolute term. So you can have innovation in pharmaceuticals. You can have innovation in utility stocks. You can have innovation in technology, in energy. Go down the list, mm-hmm. right? But when you look at innovation, I have always said that you have to take a top-down, bottom-up approach, meaning in the top-down process, you want to look at the world as your oyster and say, okay, what are the trends? What are the macro trends going on? Right now, crypto mining is one of the hottest things, mm-hmm. innovation things that is going on. And the institutional interest in crypto mining, a good friend of mine said to me today, you know, I want you to think about crypto mining like when there was gold mining and yes. people went on the gold rush.
Yep.
And all the people that were mining for gold, they're now mining for cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. And the technology involved in that, in the interest and all of the components that are associated with that, means you got to have innovation. So to answer your question specifically, when we look at innovation or companies with innovation, we first take the top-down approach, which is to say, look at the world and what are the trends over the next 3, 5, 10, 20 years. You know, right now, fintech, right? Mm-hmm. Crypto. These are huge. The cloud. These are all huge innovations. We then go look at the businesses and the valuations of those businesses, how they compare to their peers, and we own them from there. We have had, you know, there's no guarantees on this in the future, but we have had massive success in owning some of our technology companies. Actually, mm-hmm. one of our biggest holdings is AMD. We started buying around $9 a share. Now it's at, they just announced their earnings yesterday, traded today as high as, I think, 125.
Yep.
AMD is a classic example of a macro trend in semiconductors that they have absolutely blown the cover off the ball. Same with NVIDIA, which is a stock we've owned. Mm-hmm. You got to look at management. You've mm-hmm. got to look at balance sheet. You got to look at a lot of things. And unless you're willing, Matt, to put in the time to do the research and educate yourself in all this, frankly, most people I've met should hire professionals.
Well, that's why you've got Chuck, right? I mean, you've got a whole team, right, of different people who love and live to dive into those sorts of things. I'm not that guy. Yeah, I know you're a total nerd with that stuff, brother. Yeah. I absolutely agree.
Yes.
And that's the kind of person that you want at the helm, is somebody who just loves, lives, and breathes it. Don't you want that in your physicians? Don't you want that in your accountants? Don't you want that in all of those people? Those are the sorts of people you want to surround yourself with. Okay, Mark, closing ideas. Anything else that you want to talk about? Innovation real quick, or anything that we're going to tee up for the next show that we've got? What do you got to wrap us up today?
Well, we're going to come back with Chuck, and we're going to finish up our 5-part series on knowing what you own and why you own it. And that's about all I got for you, brother.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to learning more from you, and I'm sure our audience is too, about the emerging crypto sort of market and what's going on there, because I think you know this, but not a lot of people talking about that, just because they still think it is the wild, wild west. And I don't know if anybody's paid attention, but you embrace the wild west because you're actually part of the reason why the west is wild, which I really, truly appreciate. So if you have not subscribed to the podcast, everybody, make sure you click that subscribe now button below. But most importantly, share this with somebody. Start getting them on the journey for clarity. Get them to start questioning what they have been told and what they hear in the mainstream media, and start seeing how, when you learn what you own and why you own it, and you have true clarity, how that will not only change the way that you invest, but it will also help you help other people have the same clarity. Mark, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, brother.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.